This is the news, according to me. Oh, yes, believe it or not, this is the news, according to me. It is Tuesday, May 16th, 8:04 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am at my home studio this morning. I got in late last night because, of course, my flight was late, as it always is. I don't understand it. When I want it to be late, it's not late, or it's not late enough. Last night, everything was going well. I was on time, got to the airport, got to the gate about 5 minutes before they were supposed to start boarding. And they make this announcement. The crew's coming from Salt Lake, and they're not going to be here yet. They haven't touched down yet. The plane was there, but they had a crew swap, so they had... Crew had to come from another. Of course, the gate they put them at was 10 miles away, so they had to do that. Of course, they had to get lunch or supper, whatever they were going to get. Now, what's amazing to me is that they knew this an hour or more from Salt Lake to Dallas. They would have known that this crew was going to be late by at least an hour. They told us 5 minutes prior to boarding. Now, maybe they thought they were going to be able to get a different crew there or something. This was the only, I don't know what was going on. Maybe they thought something else was going to be able to choose. And sometimes that does happen. Another crew gets canceled or rerouted or whatever. People complain about the airlines. Yeah, I tell you what, and they do a lot of screw ups. However, when you stop and think about it, just take a moment to step back and take a big look at the big picture here. You're moving people around, people in bags, in a system where the bags, you check in the bags, they have to go into a different part of the airplane, sometimes to multiple different airplanes, depending on the connections that are involved. The people have to be, have to have enough time to get from one plane to the next or whatever's going on there. Security issues. Every single airplane has a maintenance schedule that has to be complied with. And they have to have them in a certain particular location in order to do that maintenance. So they have to have maintenance bases. They have to have maintenance areas where there is maintenance available to do certain procedures, especially. That gets fewer and fewer. So the heavier the maintenance is, the scheduled maintenance is. Then you have random maintenance issues where things break. Or, the malfunction. And they have to be fixed. Then you have, throw into that, the crew schedules that have to be, you can only fly so many hours a day. So you got multiple crew. One of them gets sick or gets fatigued. It throws a monkey wrench into the whole process. Then you have, On top of all of that, weather. That can mess up things. You can have weather in Chicago that messes up San Francisco. Because now you have a plane that was supposed to take off from Chicago, go to San Francisco, with a crew, with passengers, get everybody there, switch airplanes or whatever's going, that airplane, there's a crew in San Francisco waiting on that airplane. There's passengers waiting on that airplane. Now you got more passengers in Chicago trying to get out of Chicago. And that airplane, particularly, maybe it breaks or whatever happens to it, or the weather, however it affects it. It is amazing to me that we get anything done in the world of aviation. When you think of all the random factors. I used to tell pilots all the time, I think it's about 17 other people, or 17 people total. I think it's, this number may have gone down due to automation and some of the other things that have happened, especially with baggage handling. But for every flight for every captain that there is on an airplane, there are I think it's 17 other people, the way I'm remembered. That includes the crew, the rest of the crew. So you got your first officer, which is a co-pilot, and you've got your flight attendants, however many there are per, you know, per seat mile. You got, if you have more, if you have 50 people, there's one flight attendant. If you have more than 50, there's got to be, you know, for every 50 people, you have to have another flight attendant. And so you have those people that are on board the airplane. Then you have maintenance people, personnel. Then you have ground personnel, ramp personnel, baggage handlers, ticket agents. And this doesn't even include, when you start digging down into it, all the people who work in the offices of these companies that have to comply with regulations and paperwork and insurance and marketing and all the other things that have to happen out there. But when you look at each and every individual flight, it boils down to about 17 other people besides the captain that make that flight, have a direct impact on that flight being able to go from point A to point B and get everything done. So you don't, you know, and there's more than that if you really dig into it even further in terms of fixed personnel. So it's pretty amazing, really, when you stop and think about it. But what's even more amazing, in my opinion, and this is where it really gets deep. I mean, you have to really take another step back. You know, you were looking at the 5,000-foot view. Let's take a 30,000-foot view. You step back, and now you realize the importance of what is in my cup. I have with me my comfort food that I have not had for a while. This has been over 5 days that I've had this vanilla chai with vanilla creamer in it. I'm very grateful for the vanilla creamer this morning just because I have creamer and I have chai. I have chai to put my creamer in. Not something I have on the road. I think I'm going to start carrying chai with me. From this point on, it'll be a little different story as I move forward. I'm done with all the, like I said, if I didn't have a show this morning, it was because I was still probably in Dallas. Now, I almost thought I was going to end up in Dallas last night because the way things are going. Everything went very well with all of my other stuff, which is, that's good. I'm glad to have that over. That is a huge stress relief. You have no idea the relief of stress that over a prolonged period of about 6 months. And there's ups and downs, but it's just, you know, one thing after the next, and everything builds on. Each thing is even more stressful than the next because it is just it's a furtherance of your testing. You know, so you study one thing and then you get tested on that. And then you study another thing and you get tested on that. Well, then you put all those things together that you've learned and you get tested on all that, make sure you can put it all together. Now you take that accumulation of knowledge and then you go to the next level and you take the next step where you start to learn more things. You start to apply and activate those things that you've learned in your head. And now you have to act. And then you go from that thing. And now you actually have to perform with motor skills and all these other things. And you have to make decisions. Then you go to, you know, in the meantime, you have to have all this, you know, everything has to be standardized, so you have to do all this. And so then you go to this next step, this next level, where you start to apply all of that to something that's even more difficult. And all this knowledge that you have, all these things you have to memorize, all the numbers and limitations and everything that you have to know. And then you go to the next step, and you start to apply all those things. Which and every anything is up for grabs. You can be tested on anything at any time. Then you get to the point where you put it all together and you actually start doing the job under supervision. And the entire time you're being evaluated. And you're being evaluated. You're not left on your own. Everybody's got their own way of doing things. So each and every simple every time you get a different training person, they all have their way of doing it. As standardized as they can be, but there are still different techniques for different things. And, so, and of course, their way is the right way. It's always the way it is. So they push this. They don't just give you, and some of them do pretty good. Here's a couple different options. Try this, try that. You know, this might work for you. This might, you know, whatever. Those kinds of instructors I really appreciate because it gives you the opportunity. What fits your way of thinking best? And what workflow works best for you in this? But instead of just saying, this is what you got to do. Because it works for them, right? So it's got to work for everybody. Well, it doesn't work for everybody that way. It's just, that's not the sign of a good instructor. But that's the way some people are. And they don't communicate it very well either. So that's, which is always a problem. But so we ended up finishing all this stuff up. So now, more or less, I can kind of develop my workflow and do my thing. And hopefully work with the people I'll be working with, and they'll appreciate the fact that I respect their opinions and respect their experience. Hopefully they respect mine. So it's been a long haul, a long 6 months, 5 months really. But yeah, it's been good. It's been very good. It's been a good experience. It's just been very stressful in some ways. And it's stress you put yourself under. It's not stress that's, you know, it's really, people have been awesome all along the way, but it's just been that way. And nobody, not a single person has asked me what was in my cup. Not one, which is very disgusting in my opinion, but that's the way it goes. Now, I also have a backup cup here because yesterday I went to I went to Chick-fil-A for lunch yesterday in Dallas. Now, in the evening, right before I came to South Bend, I flew from Dallas to South Bend, and right in that terminal area, if you're familiar with it, there is a Whataburger. And Whataburger is interesting. They use regular, like just a loaf of bread type bread, and they toast it, and they have this like a square burger. It's pretty good. It seems like it's pretty good beef. I don't know. I don't know exactly what it's made. I don't think it's grain fed, but it's much better than what you would get at McDonald's. And it's like, I got a double cheeseburger because I was celebrating getting this whole thing done and making my flight. Wolfed it down, of course, because I thought we were going to board any time. I thought I had 10 minutes before we were going to board, so I wolfed the thing down. And I find out that we're, you know, guess what? Take your time eating that sandwich. As I'm finishing up the last bite, they announced that we're going to wait for an hour. So I went back and got another sweet tea to fill up my thermos. And that is what I have. So I have a combination here of about half Chick-fil-A sweet tea and Whataburger sweet tea. I have to say, Whataburger sweet tea is pretty good. It depends on, I'm sure it would be better, you know, they probably made it at the beginning. I don't know how often they make it. That's the key. That if they don't, the places that do bad with sweet tea are the places that do not wash the dishes, wash the container, just keep making it. And then it gets this, it's called a coliform bacteria. It's not deadly or anything. It's just, it creates a taste in the tea that you can, I can taste it. And it just goes bad quickly. And you have to, between brews, you have to go in and basically scour the, get that stuff out of there. And then you make new tea and it's perfect. And the whole process is awesome. But if you just keep putting new tea in that bin without cleaning it properly, you'll never lose that. You'll never lose that particular flavor, that taste, that funky taste. Now, Whataburger apparently did a pretty good job. It was later in the day, so it's hard telling how old the tea was, but it didn't have that funky taste, which makes me think that they probably cleaned it. People down south tend to know what they're doing with tea, I have found, especially deep south. They typically know how to make tea, and everybody has sweet tea there. You go into some place and you ask for sweet tea, and they don't have it. You're kind of like, people aren't from around here, are you? You know, it's kind of weird. Anyway, so big news yesterday. This apparently happened as I was posting my show yesterday, or right after I did my show. Big bombshell announcement comes out. Everybody's, you know, the Durham report is out. Durham. Now, I listened to several different commentators on it, and I kind of listened to what the report basically said, and actual people who put, like, snippets up on the screen of what the actual report was, what, you know, actual text from his report. And it seemed to me that it was pretty condemning of the FBI. Now, if you've listened to this show at all, you know that I am not a big fan of the FBI anymore. What we used to just, I guess, take for granted in terms of trusting the FBI and thinking that they were just a law enforcement investigating group of individuals. Apparently, it has become a politicized glut of an organization that needs to be either gutted or just downright gotten rid of. Put a constitutional. What would we call it? Constitutional law enforcement bureau or something. I don't know. Because the feds, they have ruined it. These guys have ruined the bureau, in my opinion. There's got to be field agents out there that are just livid about this whole thing because they are working out there. They're trying to do their best. They're trying to do their jobs, trying to be fair, impartial, to just serve justice. And here we are with these guys at the top playing games with this whole thing, making it a political operation for a particular party or a particular establishment, if you will. And I think it's just disgusting. I didn't have a whole lot of hope in Durham's, even if Durham did come out with damning information and indictments. I don't even know if he could be the one to indict. I think he could suggest indictments recommend indictments. At this point, I didn't think anything was going to happen simply because Merrick Garland wouldn't follow through on it. Nothing would happen. Now, I think it was quite shocking, in fact, that Merrick Garland even posted it, that he even put it out for the public. However, I think that there may have been this deal where he said, you're not going to bring any indictments and we'll post it publicly. Otherwise, we're going to put a lid on it. Because Merrick Garland, at the end of the day, Merrick has this guy's in charge of this stuff. The independent counsel only goes so far. Now, so I listened to this and it was very condemning of the FBI. However, there was no accountability, of course, no accountability. Now, like it or not, I think Durham probably knows a lot of things that went on that he's not putting in his report. I'm sure he figured has put two and two together in this whole thing. And he's trying to, part of the puzzle he had to put together was, how do I make this palatable for everybody involved without throwing my buddies and my name and people I know under the bus here, or making the bureau look bad? I'm sure he's trying to do his best to save face for the Justice Department. I don't know. Maybe not. Now, originally, Durham came up with some indictments, and he went to trial with some things, and he failed miserably because it's a D.C. court. Now, I think he probably knew enough to know that it probably was not going to go well, but I don't think he knew the extent of it, and I think that it fell so flat so quickly, I think it even shocked him. Now, having said that, and because of this, I think he knows that anything he would bring to the table for indictments, I think he knew in a D.C. court he's not going to win. So what's the purpose? What's the use? Do you continue on with this and try to spend the money, the taxpayer dollars, to try to make a case stick that's just going to be thrown down because of the breakdown of the justice system? It's gone beyond the pale now. I mean, what's that point of no return or whatever? You've gone off the cliff, you've gone off the slope, the slippery slope, and there's no getting back. You're beyond the power curve. You're in Coffin Corner, whatever you're going to call it. And I think that's where it's at right now. At least in D.C., in that court system. So I don't know. I don't know if that was his thinking there or not, or if it was just that, if this whole thing was a ruse. Now remember who appointed Durham. It was Bill Barr. He was appointed by Bill Barr. Wasn't appointed by Trump. Everybody says, oh, it's Trump appointed Durham to go after. No, Trump didn't appoint him. Bill Barr appointed him. Bill Barr is no fan of Donald Trump. Bill Barr is about as deep into the establishment as he's retired. You don't come back out of retirement. Unless somebody's, you know, on the inside letting you in, back in. It's just that you've got connections that entire time. You never really left, if that's the case. If you could just, yeah, I think he left like twice and came back the third time. And now he's writing books. Still, he's still out there, still has influence. So remember that. Now, Durham, of course, he has to basically report on this stuff. He still has a career to deal with here. He has to try to protect. I'm sure he's making good money. Doesn't want to see that go away. Probably drawing near the end of his career, but at the same time, you know, he just wants to go off and, you know, do his retirement here soon and be done with it, not have to deal with any craziness with the cancel culture that's out there. Now, at the same time, having said that, there is a whole other angle on this thing. If you've been looking at MSNBC or CNN, now CNN, actually, surprisingly, CNN has kind of come through, and I think it was Clapper, actually. It was a guy, Jake Clapper, is that his name? Jake Tapper. He has actually come out and said it's pretty condemning of the FBI, and it's actually somewhat exonerates Donald Trump. Now, of course, that's one extreme on the left where they've actually admitted it. One person has actually admitted that, okay, there were some issues here. I think he probably understands the special counsel process a little bit better than some people in MSNBC. The only thing I saw coming out of MSNBC was, oh, it looked like he had troubling ties, troubling communications to the Russians. They're still going after this Russian thing. After all this, they're still trying to twist the Durham report to say that Trump had troubling ties to Russia. That was one of the headlines they had on there. What? The Mueller report, let alone the Durham report, found no collusion between Trump's. Now, the people who, well, there were people arrested, Papadopoulos, all these people were arrested, there were people were put in jail. Yeah, for process crimes. None of them were put in prison. Steve Bannon was not put in prison for anything he did. It was for contempt of court, for not showing up for this clown case court thing. And that was through his lawyers. They have sued and prosecuted lawyers involved in this thing. Oh, how dare you defend that man? We're going to go after you now. That's how corrupt this whole thing has become. Now nobody wants to be Trump's lawyer or anybody else's lawyer that's around Trump. Roger Stone was not arrested for any kind of collusion with Russia. Steve Bannon, no collusion with Russia. They arrested him on a process crime. Papadopoulos, process crime. You can go down the list. By the way, how many Russians have they arrested for their interference in the election in 2016? Now, they didn't interfere with anything in 2020. It's the most perfect election ever. Probably just 2016 that they were able to do this. So Rachel Maddow is the other extreme in this process. She gets on there and she starts talking about, oh, the right was all, they thought Durham was going to save the day. For 4 years, this has been going on, and they thought he was going to save the day, and blah, 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 blah. No, we didn't think he was going to save the day. We thought maybe there was a modicum of hope here that maybe he would find something or maybe something was going to come out. But again, just because he finds something doesn't mean it's going to be processed or that there's going to be any accountability. It means nothing. So there was some particular, but again, I, in my opinion, Durham is establishment. He was put in place to pacify people for a long enough time, stretch it out over a long enough period of time, and then nothing happens. Or it's a kind of a you know, when you're expecting some fireworks to go off, there's just nothing but a poof, like a snap and pop. That's all it is. So we have this, but she goes on and on about how the, you know, oh, we thought Durham was going to be the, you know, Superman here and come in and save the day. Have all these people go off to Gitmo. Well, I don't think your average person was thinking that. I pretty much after the first time attempt that I think Durham put two cases before courts in D.C. and both of them flopped. And after that, I was like, yeah, this doesn't matter what he finds. Okay, keep in mind, there was an FBI agent that changed an answer from yes to no, or what, one way or the other, from a no to a yes or a yes to a no, whatever it was, on paperwork. Intentionally, this wasn't a mistake. He changed it. You have to wittingly know that you're doing that. Oh, I made a mistake. Oops, oopsie, oopsie, whoopsie. Oh yeah, I guess we got that enabled us to get the FISA warrant for a couple more times. Oopsie. That's treason, folks. That, talk about interfering with an election, subverting a democracy. This guy should be in prison. You know what they'll do to you if you have a medical form and you fill something out and accidentally put something wrong in there? Yeah, welcome to the world of fines and imprisonment. Yeah. So we have so Rachel Maddow goes on there and all she can see in this whole report is that it was womp womp womp. So that's all she thinks it was. For 4 years, we were told that this is going to be fine. They're going to find something. No, for 10 years now, it seems like, for over 5 years, we've been told that Russia, 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 the entire time Trump was in office, it was Russia, Russia, Russia. He's not a legitimate president, blah, 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 blah. And they had not an ounce of evidence for anything. That's all we heard. The walls are closing in. The walls are closing in. We're still hearing that. They're still saying it 6 years later. Walls are closing in on Trump. Yeah, because you're going after things that happened back in 1990. Oh my word! I'm telling you, there is this Trump derangement thing going on. That is, it just apparently, I don't understand how these people sleep at night. I really don't. How long can they live in this delusional world? It is unbelievable. But, you know, democratic socialism, got to have democratic socialism. It's going to be a good thing. Look at all the places that's been put in place. There was a restaurant, I think it was in, in Oregon somewhere, where this guy was an anti-capitalist. He started this coffee shop, this anti-capitalist coffee shop. Now, I don't know what the guy was doing, He had all this merch in his store. He had, you know, apparently he made really good coffee, I guess. I don't know. But he had all this merch. He was selling things in his store. You know, he was a capitalist. Free market, open market type guy, selling his products and services. And now maybe he wasn't selling them. Maybe he was allowing people to just come in and take everything. I don't know. Because, you know, that's not capitalism. He's just, you know, some kind of socialist. Just, you know, if you want to come in and want something, just take it. Just pay what you can afford. That works in some circumstances. That does actually work. There was a fellow by the name of Keith Green back in the 70s who had, it was kind of during a Jesus movement thing. And it was, he had this, one of his things was that was back when they kind of did concerts. Now things, there are fewer and fewer Christian musicians who are doing concerts. A lot of times now it's worship events. And of course, in some churches, the worship event is a concert, so depending on how you look at it. It's more about them and their performance. But you sing along with their performance. But I mean, but sometimes it's genuine worship. But anyway, so we have, but Keith Green, back in the CCM days, we used to call it contemporary Christian music. And it was it was more of a message music industry at that time. It wasn't really, I would call it worship music as much. Like Wayne the Brain Watson, there was very inspiring, very just heart-wrenching stuff. I mean, really, it's just good music, good quality of music and stuff. Some of it was very good. Now, there was others just ridiculous. But it was kind of like they were trying to make pop music, Christianized pop music is what it was. And some of them were that way. Some of them were true ministers. When you'd see them in concert, or when you go to one of their concerts, it was inspiring. I mean, it was just very faith building. Others not so much. But so we had this one guy called Keith Green, and he was kind of the forerunner in some ways of the modern Christian music movement. He played piano mostly. A very fiery character. Very just kind of a sold out person, just all in. And he'd have messages, you know, and stuff that he basically kind of preached through his music. He was kind of a music preacher, I would say. And he died in a plane crash. It was very tragic, very sad story, him and some of his kids. And I actually talked to somebody who I happen to know a guy. I haven't talked to him for years. Gordon Ashelman. He was going to get on the plane. In fact, he stepped onto the plane, and because a couple of Keith's children wanted to get on the plane, it was just a small plane. It was a 421 or 404. I think it was 404. I think it was Cessna 404. It's a twin engine airplane. He was going to go for a ride, because they got this airplane. They were so excited about having this airplane and decided to take it for a ride down in Texas. And they were going to go in. And Gordon was on the airplane, and his kids wanted to go. So he got off so his kids could get on. They were overloaded. I don't think the pilot realized how many people were actually on that plane even, because they were up front. I think it was just one pilot, basically a single pilot operation. And Gordon ended up writing a book called The Unseen Masses, I think is what it's called. And he got off the plane, helped close the door, plane took off, and on takeoff, they lost control, crashed. Everybody died. That's got to have an effect on you the rest of your life. This guy was an interesting character in terms of, you know, just his fieriness, and his music still lives on today. In fact, people are still redoing some of his songs. There's a fellow named Chris Tomlin just redid one of his songs, and Keith was inspiring. He was an inspiring guy. I don't know where I started off with this. I don't know why I got down this rabbit trail. But nonetheless, I will. I was talking about Rachel Maddow, so I don't know how I got that on the trail. So if you're listening, you probably understand better than I do. I wasn't paying attention to what I was saying. So we had Rachel Maddow. Now she's gone down this weird derangement syndrome thing. It's mind-boggling to me. And she blows it off like, well, nothing happened. Well, then there's this one fellow who made a mistake on a paperwork. She just called it a mistake when she was doing this, her little segment last night. You know, there's one FBI agent that made a mistake. There were some mistakes made. And the FBI basically has come out after this Durham report and said, oh, oops, oopsie, whoopsie, sorry, my bad. We'll fix it. Well, you know, if the things would have been in place back then that were in place now, that this wouldn't have happened. So the problem's gone away. The problem can't happen again because we've already fixed it. You know, nothing to see here. Move along. Kind of thing. Yeah, I don't think so, guys. Because you're still doing this stuff. You're still doing it. You're still going after. You're embedding FBI agents, informants, all over the place. Now, this was a really, speaking of all this weird stuff, this is a creepy, weird story. Now, this has happened twice now that I know of. This is weird. And it's obviously, so obviously weird that it's obviously been staged. There was a, you know, Biden comes out with this statement about white supremacy. The biggest problem we have in this country, the biggest threat to our nation is white supremacy. Really? Now, Biden's at a black college. He's got a whole robe on, you know, like he's a doctorate. Like he's, you know, like he's just some big, probably got, they probably gave him an honorary doctorate or something. Who knows? Probably can't even spell doctorate. Probably thinks he's a doctor now. Probably, yeah. Like his wife. She's a surgeon. She has an educational doctorate. People think she's an MD. Whoopi Goldberg. And the reason that's so funny is because somebody on The View said she's a doctor. And Whoopi goes, yeah, and a dang good doctor, too, from what I understand. She has a doctorate in education. And it's not in like high education. It's like grade school education, that's not to belittle that. I'm just saying it's very far from being a doctor, a medical doctor. Okay. It's not that it's worse or less difficult. All I'm saying is it's very different. And it just shows the lack of sincerity in everything that they say up there. They're just talking out of their butts. Okay. Just to put it bluntly, that's just, yeah. I don't know any other way, but that's the only way I know to put it. So these people are, the farm boys come out of me now. So I was never on the farm. Well, I did live on a farm for a little while, but it wasn't our farm. It was a funny farm. So if we had this, this stuff is, it's just nuts. It's just absolutely nuts. Now this, so Biden was giving this speech about white supremacy. Of course, everybody's kind of coming down on him for saying it because he's, you know, what are you talking about? Within hours, I mean, if not minutes, I think it might have been minutes after this speech. This group of individuals comes marching down, I think it's through the Capitol area. This group of individuals comes marching down through the Capitol. They're all waving flag. About every other one has a flagpole waving a flag. Flags are all the same. They're all wearing the same shirts, all wearing the same pants, hats with these patches on them, some kind of organization. Their faces are all completely covered. Completely covered. Not just a bandana type thing around their face. It is completely covered, and they're all wearing sunglasses. Because, you know, facial recognition is pretty high tech nowadays in D.C., and you can actually get, they actually have retinal scanners that they can get you from a distance. They don't have to walk up to your eye and put the scanner in there anymore. They can actually scan your eyes from a long ways away, hundreds of feet. They can recognize who you are. I guarantee you these guys were feds or something, part of some kind of organization within the organization, if you know what I mean, who are doing this stuff. Now, this happened, and it looked like the same guys. They were all built about the same, and it was all men about the same age. And a lot of people were making comments like, these all look like they're field agents, and they all look like they're in field agent shape. They're all carrying these flags, all the same size flags, and some of the flags are upside down. And of course, they're saying, stuff about America on some of their little posters that they're holding up, kind of mocking or similar, kind of making it similar to some of the Trump movement stuff. It's exactly what they wanted it to look like. I'm surprised they weren't wearing red hats. Who are these people, and what is this organization? What is the name of this organization? Has anybody ever heard of it before? There's like 150 of these guys. Where'd they come from? That's like a total of all the white supremacists in the nation. Now, I'm not saying it's all the racists in the nation, because there's racists. Yes, in my opinion, in both colors, both camps, there are people who are bigots. And it doesn't matter what color your skin is. You can be a bigot. You can be prejudiced. So it's just bizarre. So these guys are walking down, marching down the street, and right behind them, there's about 12 or 13 bicycle cops, DC bicycle cops, following them. The camera angles were perfect. And there was only one news media company that put the video out of this happening. And they had all the camera angles set up for this entire, I think the march lasted like 2 blocks. I didn't see anything about white supremacy on any of their signs or anything. All I heard was, this is a white supremacist organization, group of people marching through the streets of Capitol. Bizarre. Now this, keep in mind, this happened out west. When a group, and they were all, it was the same way. They had all these guys lined up, they pat them down on their knees, they had their hands behind their back, because they were about to go to a protest or something, whatever it was, it's a counter-protest. So they arrested them before they got there. They found them in this truck, the back of a truck. They hadn't committed any crimes yet, but they were all in handcuffs. And by the way, they all still had their faces covered. But it's about 30 of them in that case. It was just bizarre. It was weird. And of course, they show all these guys and have all the camera angles are perfect. The lighting's all perfect. It's all organized. These guys are all, oh, look, we just busted another white supremacy group. Really? So what happened to these guys? Are they in jail now? Where's the court date? When do these guys go to court? How does this work? You know, there was this whole Durham investigation thing. We get back to this whole thing again. You know, that you talk about, we're spending all this money on this investigation of the Russia collusion thing. And then again, obviously when there is an investigation, there is a report, there is a budget, all these other things that go on. And then we get this, as I've said before, I've mentioned it several times, when Bill Barr comes out and says there was no, 2 days after the election, and says there was no evidence of any voter fraud in the 2020 election. Oh, you just determined that 2 days after the election. I guess it just, you must have been right up around the top of it. You must have had quite a team working on that. What were the names of all the officers working on that team? We should give them a medal for doing such a good job. And you apparently did it with no budget whatsoever. I know I'm beating a dead horse here, but people need to ask those kinds of questions. Just because Bill Barr comes out and says it doesn't make it so. We need the receipts. And that's like just when what's her name, which is trying to confront Trump about, why didn't you come out and tell everybody to go home? Why don't you tell everybody be peaceful on January 6th? Oh, well, let me show you what I got here in my brief, in my coat jacket here. Pulls it out and says, the day before, this is the statement I made on Twitter. This is the statement I made on Twitter, and they took it down. The next day, he made a statement that they took down the next day. What's he supposed to do? And that whole, I think he fell into one trap he fell into, and now they're using, I knew they would. I knew when I heard him say it, I was like, they're going to use that against him. They pushed him and pushed him at the debate between him and Mushroom Brains. And they said, what about the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers? The Proud Boys are a white supremacist group, which they're not at all. They've been totally, totally maligned in this process. I would go after, they should sue for defamation, in my opinion. And they said, so what are you going to tell, what do you say to the Proud Boys? Well, I'm going to say, you know, stand down, and Proud Boys, I guess, you know, stand down and stand by. You know what I would have said in that moment? I would have said, they don't take orders from me. I'm not the head of their organization. I don't know anything about them. So I'm not going to give them orders because I'm not in charge of them. I'm going to give everyone the recommendation to remain peaceful and to honor law enforcement and the laws of our nation. All of a sudden he acted like he was their commander. And that's to some degree, I mean, even though he didn't, he was just making a statement. He's not their commander, but that's what they're making him out to be now. Oh, see, he was telling them what to do. I've heard commentators say that. They were following orders from him. But you don't think the left does this? Antifa? Oh, there's no such thing as Antifa. It's just an ideology. Christopher Wray, head of the FBI, even believes this. How do all these people show? That's not an organization. How do all these people show up all organized, wearing the same thing, carrying the same stuff, having the same signs? Somebody's organizing something somewhere on social media or someplace. Maybe it's on the dark web. I don't know. The deep web, whatever. Because something's going on. Somebody's in charge of it. Somebody's funding it. Somebody's paying to bust these people around. And I guarantee you the FBI probably knows who it is. And they're sitting on it, much like a laptop. This is the kind of thing we're dealing with at this point. The show must go on. The political theater must go on. This reminds me of, if you remember back during the campaign when Joe Biden was doing a campaign, it was during COVID, and he
found this on the web.
Apparently Siri thinks I was looking for something. And apparently, you know, Joe was doing this thing where people pulled it up in cars. All these cars were parked, and every time he would make a statement, they'd all honk their horns. I looked at this event. I don't even know if you can find it on YouTube anymore, not if you find it anywhere online or not. It was a flagrant show. It was a phony, made-for-TV event. They had boom cameras going up and down. Lighting was perfect. A car dealer must have donated a bunch of cars to park at this particular thing. Because unfortunately, if you looked closely as the cameras were panning around, the cars were empty. And most of them were all one particular genre. They were Chryslers, Jeeps, Dodge and Chrysler. And Jeeps, which if you know anything, Chrysler dealers, the Dodge dealers basically are the ones who are selling brand new Jeeps. They're the ones who carry the Jeep line. Now, if you know anything about leftists and the liberal party, most of them do not drive Jeeps. Most of the people I know who drive Jeeps are people who are flag-waving Trump supporters. I happen to own a Jeep. A real Jeep, a Wrangler. I own a Jeep Wrangler. The two-door, the real Jeep. Not a Liberty, not a whatever Compass or any of that. It's not the SUVs. It's a Jeep. We wave at each other. I don't wave at Compass people. Sorry. No, Compass isn't a bad car, don't get me wrong. It's but it's a yuppie car. Yeah, you don't take that one out of the back roads too much. Anyway. I'm just getting started. I'm 50 minutes in and I'm just getting started. The good news is, folks, this week, this is good news for the entire world, for the World Wide Web. I'll probably have a show every day this week. Friday, I'm not so sure about. Today, tomorrow, and Thursday, I will have a show. I've got some projects I got to get done today and tomorrow. Hopefully, it's not going to rain this week because I got a lot of stuff to do outside. But the good news is, tomorrow, in case you're wondering, tomorrow is going to have, I think, a little bit of a spiritual bent to it. I'm going to talk a little bit about some spiritual things. I've been wanting to kind of do this. I don't like, but my show is supposed to be more political oriented, and I try to stay a little bit more along those lines, even though I throw in my theological thoughts occasionally. Possibly tomorrow or the next day, I'm going to try to have a little bit more of a faith show about some spiritual stuff. Some interesting things that have been going on. Anyway, so we're gonna talk about that a little bit. There's a buddy of mine I'd like to interview sometime because he's got some real deep knowledge on some interesting things about history and the Bible and the Earth and what all happened. It'd be fun to interview. Could probably spend a week interviewing him. And only scratch the surface of what he knows, but it would be fun to do that. Regardless of that, I must carry on. I've got a lot of things to get done today. It's only 9 o'clock. I actually got up earlier than I thought I would, considering I've been on Central Time most of my week here, and this has been and it got in late. So I managed to get up and get going here pretty early. So hopefully this will be posted in the next few minutes. And like I said, I'll probably have a show tomorrow. Morning, a little bit earlier, probably tomorrow morning. And other than that, I will continue to pray for you, for the nation, and for the leaders of our nation. And I would invite you to do the same. We will pray together. We will agree together that this nation needs the Spirit of God to move on our hearts. We need to have a moment of repentance, I think, in our nation. Folks, God bless. Have a great week, great rest of your day. Take care. I'll see you tomorrow.